Okay, if we're ready, we'll call the next case, which is case number 62745, In Re Bice Montique. This is an MRAP 5 certified question, which the court has accepted. We have Mr. Fox and Mr. Crosby here for the appellants, and I have Mr. Shelton for the respondent.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Fox, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, may I please the Court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. We are here to answer two questions for the United States Bankruptcy Court. One question is whether the recording of an assignment of a deed of trust is a substantive or merely a ministerial act. NRS 106.210 makes clear that it is substantive because a party may not foreclose unless and until the assignment is recorded.
But the recording itself, how do you, it seems like you're bootstrapping that into something more substantive than perhaps it might be.
Your Honor, I don't know how the legislature could have made it more substantive. I mean, the statute flat out reads that unless and until it's recorded, that there is no power of sale pursuant to NRS 107.080.
But the actual act of recording?
I think that the legislature was responding to an environment in which the titles to properties are becoming confused and very difficult for parties to understand. And they chose to pass a statute that made it clear that before you can foreclose, you have to record this.
Well, but determining whether it's substantive or ministerial, and I don't mean ministerial under a stay analysis, but ministerial as it relates to the purpose or function of the required filing or recording is what is it supposed to do? Isn't it a notice type of provision?
I think NRS 106.210 changes it from a notice, simply a notice provision, to actually allowing and bestowing powers that otherwise do not exist.
Where do you get that in the statute? And if it's not within the statute, where do you get that in case law?
Well, two responses. I mean, NRS 2101 says, if the beneficial interest under a deed of trust has been assigned, the trustee under the deed of trust may not exercise the power of sale pursuant to NRS 107.080 unless and until the assignment is recorded pursuant to this subsection. The prior sentence addresses if it's a mortgage, that the mortgage likewise cannot be enforced until the assignment is recorded. I would also look to this Court's decision in Foster v. Washoe County, where this Court looked at what a ministerial act was and said that a ministerial act is defined as absolute, certain, and imperative. It says that it requires execution of a set of tasks imposed by law, prescribing and defining the time, mode, and occasion of its performance with such certainty that nothing remains for judgment or discretion. NRS 106.210 does not require a bank at any specific time to record a notice of assignment of the deed of trust unless and until they want to exercise sale. That's entirely within their discretion and therefore wouldn't fit this court's definition in the Foster v. Washoe County case. To the extent that the bank chooses when they want to pursue foreclosure, to the extent that they choose when and if they're going to record that assignment of the deed of trust, then at least under the Washoe County case, that's not a ministerial act. To the extent that the Nevada legislature went to the time and effort to amend the statute to make it clear that that power does not exist, cannot be exercised, cannot be used until the assignment is recorded, I don't think that can be found as simply an
ministerial act. If the designated beneficiary, does your analysis change if the designated beneficiary under the deed of trust is an agent, as is asserted here? MERS is an agent for the lender.
Well, I think it's important to understand agent what. And this court in Edelstein made clear that the agency relationships relates to the note. That when the deed of trust says that we are nominee for lender or lender's assigns, that relates to their powers under the note. And this court in Edelstein said that is separate and distinct from its powers as beneficiary of the deed of trust. Now, MERS and Deutsche Bank in their briefs attempt to merge those two issues into one and say, well, MERS is beneficiary, they're an agent, we're going to collaborate those two, put them together, and say they have the power to foreclose. But this court in Edelstein made clear that that's a distinct, those are two distinct roles. To hold otherwise would literally be to give MERS more power than it has as the beneficiary of the deed of trust or more power than its agent, Deutsche Bank, holds. Deutsche Bank is the note holder under Edelstein cannot foreclose because it doesn't have the beneficial interest in the deed of trust. Mers merely as beneficiary of the deed of trust cannot foreclose because the note and deed of trust are not united. To follow the reasoning in the opponent's brief would be to give Mers a power greater than either it has as agent, which would violate agency principle laws, or as simply the deed of trust beneficiary.
But Edelstein did not hold that the separation of the note and deed of trust renders the security or the lien on the property void.
But I'm not asking this court to void it.
That's exactly what you're asking. No. You're suggesting that the creditor in this case, when a bankruptcy is filed, becomes unsecured.
Yes, but that is distinct from saying that...
Only because an assignment which the holder of the note's agent didn't record before the foreclosure.
Yes.
So in order for us to do that, we have to extend that recording requirement to conclude that the deed of trust is now void.
No, Your Honor.
Where do you get that analysis?
Sure. Your Honor, I don't believe it's voiding the deed of trust. I believe that holding that the beneficiary of the deed of trust or that holding that they are an unsecured creditor is simply the note holder, simply consistent with this court's decision in Leyva and, more importantly, under the statute of frauds. In Leyva, this court said, a deed of trust constitutes a conveyance of land under NRS 111.010, citing to Ray v. Hawkins, which is quite established law. Then citing the statute of frauds, it said, no interest in lands, nor any trust or power over lands, shall be created or assigned unless by deed or conveyance in writing subscribed by the party creating or assigning the same. At the time that the bankruptcy was filing, Deutsche Bank did not have an assignment. Assignment had not been issued. Pursuant to the statute of frauds, it had no interest in that land. And therefore, it would be illogical to conclude somehow that it had a secured interest in the land, because pursuant to this court's later decision and the NRS statute of frauds, it had no interest in land at the time that the bankruptcy was filed. That is further consistent, and that actually brings to the other question. The other question the court asked is whether a note and deed of trust have to be unified, essentially to have the power and standing to foreclose. And in Edelstein, this court made clear that they must be unified, they must be held together. If a party cannot exercise the rights of foreclosure, it's unsecure. That's consistent with the restatement. The restatement, which this court adopted in Edelstein, at comment A specifically says, when the right of enforcement of the note and the mortgage are split, the note becomes, as a practical matter, unsecured.
Can it ever be unified?
Absolutely. If the bankruptcy was out of the picture, all that would have to be done is for the assignment of the deed of trust to be transferred over to the holder of the note, and you would have the reunification of the instruments.
How is there any violation of the stay by trying to unify during the period of bankruptcy?
Because pursuant to bankruptcy law, on the day that a bankruptcy is filed, under 502 and 506, that is the time at which a debt or the status of a debt is determined. 362 prevents any creditor from bettering their position against the debtor or against the property of the estate. And I think that it has to be clear. The only reason this can't be done is because of bankruptcy law. Federal bankruptcy statute prevents the reunification.
So under that argument, should we even be looking at this? If it's governed by federal law, perhaps we shouldn't even be looking at it.
Well, and I argued to the bankruptcy court in the transcript. I mean, the same argument to the bankruptcy court that I think this is far more a bankruptcy issue than it is a state law issue. But to the extent that the bankruptcy court needs this court to clarify that, yes, while a note and deed of trust are split, the note is unsecured, that is what the bankruptcy court is looking for this court to do.
I'm sorry, Chief.
I was just going to ask you, Mr. Fox, is that going back to Justice Hardesty's original question, you asking us to void the deed of trust. I mean, from all practical purposes, wouldn't it void it? I mean, if it's unsecured, the next argument is, well, it needs to be judicially reconveyed so the lien is removed from the property. So that would void the security interest. Is that correct?
Not unless and until a discharge enters. I think that has to be, in this case, we're dealing with a Chapter 13, where a debtor is required to fulfill certain obligations, make monthly payments, report their income, report taxes, do those things to the bankruptcy court. Mm-hmm. the deed of trust would remain in place and would remain a lien against this property until a point in which a discharge is entered. Again, then because of the discharge injunction, which is federal law, that would ultimately determine what would be the consequences to the deed of trust. But it's not void. We're not asking this court to say the deed of trust doesn't exist. And indeed, if the Monteiros here, as if you look at statistics, about 80% of Chapter 13s fail. If a debtor failed out of a bankruptcy, that assignment could be done, it could be executed, they could reunite. The deed of trust never goes away and is never voided.
Okay. I think I understand your position.
Why isn't this just controlled by Restatement 3rd, 5-4, Comment E?
I think if we're looking to Comment E, and indeed the examples, the example 4 and some of the examples under it, I believe Comment E does hold, but I think it has to be clear that when we look at Comment E, if you go down almost to the end, it says, however, in the absence of some additional facts creating authority in A to enforce the mortgage for B, B cannot cause the mortgage to foreclose since B does not own the mortgage. That's exactly what we have here. Party A has the note. Party B holds the deed of trust. Briefs then look to the examples, 4 and the others, 4 and particularly 9. And why 9 is a problem is because 9 says that it's the same as in example 4, but it says that the mortgagee, that agent has the duty to foreclose of the mortgage upon assignee's request. The assignee in this case would be Deutsche Bank. And Deutsche Bank can't ask for the foreclosure to occur unless it has power to foreclose.
Justice Hartsey, do you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Just under 4 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Chilton. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you. I think I'd like to pick up with your question, Justice Pickering. We believe that this whole case can be resolved very simply on Comment E. And indeed, I don't think there's any real dispute between the parties, except for a very narrow issue, which is whether the MERS, as the beneficiary, as nominee for the lender and its successors and assigns, is an agent of the note holder for purposes of exercising the power of sale. Now, Mr. Fox has argued that the MERS is an agent only with respect to the note and not the deed of trust. But his argument in that respect ignores both the facts and the applicable law. Let me tell you about the facts first. He says the note holder has no interest in the deed of trust. That's clearly wrong on the face of the deed of trust. Look at it. It says that the note holder, calls it the lender, but anyway, the lender in sections 1 and 2 has the right to receive and accept and apply payments. In section 3, it gives the lender the right to establish an escrow for property taxes. In section 5, it requires the borrower to maintain insurance, and if the borrower fails to do so, allows the lender, not MERS, to buy force-placed insurance as a substitute. In Section 9, most particularly, upon default, bankruptcy, or several other events, condemnation being one of them, the deed of trust allows the lender, not MERS, to take such action as is appropriate and necessary to protect the lender's interest in the property. Now, if the deed of trust did not confer rights on the lender would have no interest in the property, clearly. But the deed of trust on its face says the lender has an interest in the property and rights under this security instrument. What could be clearer than that? And finally, we get to Section 22, which gives the lender, not MERS, the authority and power to foreclose upon default. And what does it give MERS? Well, your opinion in Edelstein said, quoted this very provision. MERS, as nominee for lender and lender's successors and assigns, has the right to exercise any or all of those interests, the ones I've just mentioned, including, but not limited to, the right to foreclose and sell the property and to make any action required of the lender. It does that as nominee for the lender and its successors and assigns, that is to say, as their agent. It's clear on the face of the deed of trust that that's what the parties intended. MERS would act as agent for the lender, which was given all of these rights under the deed of trust, and MERS is allowed as agent solely to exercise those as reasonable and necessary under the laws of applicable states. But there's more than that. Let's look at the law. When Mr. Fox argues that because the lender supposedly doesn't have any rights under the deed of trust, it can't empower its agent to exercise any powers with regard to that property right. That, too, is incorrect as a matter of law. Agents can be empowered to buy property for a principal in the agent's name only, and to hold it and exercise all property rights in the property for the benefit of their principal, without the principal ever appearing on title. And just to cite you some cases on that point, there's Stromerson versus Averill, 22 Cal Second 808, Rice versus First National Bank, 50 New Mexico 99, another California case, Walter H. Lehmert versus Woodson, 125 Cal App Second at 186. In addition to which, there's a lovely old 1862 U.S. Supreme Court case, Calais Steamship Company versus Scudder, where an agent bought a steamship for a Californian in New York and sold it to a BFP in New York. The holding the case is that because the BFP bought without knowledge of the principal's interest, it took the boat. But the point is that an agent can buy property for and on behalf of a principal, even without the principal ever having any title to the property. And that gets me to the cases that I cited in our notice of supplemental authorities, which in the First Circuit case, Mills, and more particularly in the Rhode Island case, Bucci, both examine MERS mortgages from exactly the same point of view as this court did. Both Massachusetts and Rhode Island allow separation of deed of trust, or in their state's mortgages, from notes. And they both hold that MERS has title to the mortgage, and the note holder has title, of course, to the note.
And so your position is it doesn't need to be reunified?
No, actually, the New York, Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court held that they do have to be reunified in the same manner that you did in Edelstein, but it then went on, the First Circuit went on to say, but there's an exception where, as in the MERS mortgage, the holder of the title to the deed of trust, the legal title to the deed of trust, or I keep using deed of trust, please. We're talking security instruments in either case. Where the title, the holder of legal title is the agent for the note holder, foreclosure by MERS or an assignment by MERS or any other action by MERS as the legal title holder is valid. And Bucci addresses this very specifically, citing comment E.
Under that argument, theoretically, it would never be split.
Well, title ownership is split. The beneficial interest is never split. The note holder is principal. always owns the beneficial interest in the deed of trust. And, of course, that's what the parties intended from the beginning. That's why the note says it's a uniform secured note. And that's why paragraph 11 of the note says that in addition to the protections given the note holder under the note, a deed of trust protects the note holder from possible losses which may result if I, the borrower, do not keep the promises I make in this note. The parties intended a secured note. They named MERS as the legal title holder of the beneficial interest in the deed of trust solely for Recording Act purposes, leaving the note holder as its principal and the owner of the beneficial interest in that instrument.
So you would acknowledge that it is still necessary to record an assignment under Nevada law as a condition precedent to pursuing the foreclosure, even where the lender's beneficial interest in the deed of trust is held by their agent?
No. MERS could foreclose, as stated in comment E and actually 5.4 subdivision C, because it is the agent. Now, if MERS does execute an assignment and the foreclosure is held in the name of the note holder, yes, then section 106.210 applies. It says if there's an assignment, it must be recorded.
Let me ask you this about the recording, because Mr. Fox, is one of his main arguments, I gather, is this, is that there was a split of the note in beneficial interest of the deed of trust on the date the petition was filed. So, as I recall, under 11 U.S.C. 362A, there's not a next stay against any further proceedings against the debtor at that, as of the filing of the petition, unless it's dismissed, the petition's dismissed. Wouldn't the act of recording the assignment of the beneficial interest of the deed of trust violate the federal statute?
No, because it doesn't change the effectiveness. In other words, it would have that, the stay would prevent perfection of an interest that wasn't already perfected. Here we're saying from the date the deed of trust was recorded until the assignment occurred, which was after the notice of, after the bankruptcy filing, there was a security interest in the deed of trust because, and an ability to foreclose because MERS was the agent of the principal note holder the entire time. Okay?
So you're saying essentially that it doesn't matter whether it was a ministerial act in recording it and whether it was an exception to the state provisions under Pettit.
That's true, but I think you could also, if you disagreed with me on the first point, reach the conclusion that this was nevertheless also a ministerial act and therefore an exception to the state.
Thank you. Okay, you have about 3 minutes and 51 seconds, Mr. Fox.
Your Honors, in rebuttal, one of the things that was interesting pointed out is that we've acknowledged, Edelstein acknowledged, that the note and the deed of trust have to be brought back together. They have to be unified. The question then obviously is, well, why? And in this case, it's because they were split apart. Deutsche Bank made a choice, specifically First Lending made a choice, that it wanted to split the note and deed of trust. It wanted to make MERS the beneficiary of that deed of trust. Now, counsel argues, well, but the note holder always maintains a beneficial interest. The deed of trust makes clear it is MERS who is the beneficiary of the deed of trust.
So why isn't MERS an agent?
MERS is a valid agent under the deed of trust as relating to the note. And that's what this court in Edelstein, when it said, MERS is capable of being a valid beneficiary of the deed of trust separate from its role as an agent, nominee, for the lender. Those are separate and distinct roles, and they bring with them separate and distinct powers. There would be no doubt in this case that if MERS had chosen, as beneficiary of the deed of trust, to transfer its interest to Party C, and then acting for it on behalf of Deutsche Bank as its agent, transfer the note to Party C, that then Party C would have the power to foreclose, because those instruments would be reunited. Here, The note holder was Deutsche Bank. It was at the time of the bankruptcy filing. The beneficiary was MERS.
Right, but let's take a straight-out note and deed of trust, and you have a post-petition transfer to the same person as you just posited.
Yes.
That wouldn't require any, that's not a violation of the stay. That's between the transferor and the transferee. It has nothing to do with the...
But in that case, it wouldn't re-secure the obligation, because the obligation would be determined on the day of filing. On the day of filing, you would have an unsecured note and a lien against the property.
I think Edelstein says that that the note became unsecured by virtue of the separation, if you will.
It did, and it wouldn't be Nevada law that would prevent it. It would be the bankruptcy law. The stay would prevent the creditor from bettering.
So you're saying that the note and deed of trust became unsecured as of the moment that the note was assigned?
Yes. When the note was assigned to Deutsche Bank, I believe it was incurred at the inception of the loan, when the note remained with First National Lending.
Right, and so it was never secured?
Under this court's decision in Edelstein, if indeed, as it says, that split occurs as of the inception of the loan, then at the inception of the loan, that split occurs, and the note becomes, as the restatement says, as a practical matter, unsecured.
Going back to the federal statute and going back and looking at it in the Ministerial Act concept, address that again for me.
Sure.
So why doesn't that apply here?
Well, put simply, ministerial acts don't change the relationship of the parties. When you record an assignment of the deed of trust, you change the relationship of the parties because now a party has a right to foreclose. When you transfer or attempt to transfer the deed of trust to the party holding the note and attempt to create a secured obligation, you've changed the relationship of the parties. You've taken an unsecured creditor to a secured creditor. Both of those would be violations of the automatic stay because 502 and 506 determine the status at the time of filing.
So, again, the exception that the court recognizes under Pettit, then you say doesn't apply.
Well, in this case, no, because you have a change where under Pettit you don't have a change of the relationship of the parties. And here, under Nevada law,
another counsel's agency argument.
Right, because the agency applies to the rights under the note, and the beneficial interest under the deed of trust is their rights under the deed of trust. Those are distinct and separate roles. They're two separate hats that MERS wears, and they bring with them different rights and obligations.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Fox and Mr. Chilton. We appreciate your excellent arguments and briefing the supplemental authorities in the case, and we'll take it under submission.